Okay, we're going to call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is February 19th, and the time is 9 o'clock. Committee members present, Senator Dunleavy, Senator Bishop, Vice Chairman Fairclough, and Co-Chairman Kelly, and myself, Co-Chairman Meyer. So we have a quorum to conduct business today. Today we'll complete the overview of the capital budget, Senate Bill 18. We have several groups that are going to be making presentations today. I don't believe any of them will take too long, but we had the court system, public safety, department of law, corrections, and then the university, with the university probably being the largest one, so we'll take them last. Was there anything to come before the committee before we get started this morning? Okay, seeing none, then I'd like to welcome Doug Woolver. I thought I saw Doug here with the court system. Yep, there he is. Doug, if you could put your name on the record and proceed with your presentation. The floor is yours, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Doug Woolver, Deputy Administrative Director for the Alaska Court System. In Senate Bill 18, we have a total of $16.7 million in appropriation requests for capital projects. In the order of priority, there's $6.1 million to complete the remodel of the Boney Courthouse in Anchorage, $5.9 million for an e-filing system, just under $1 million for a new courtroom across the street here in Juneau, and $1.3 million for security projects and $2.4 million in deferred maintenance. Our first item, the Boney remodel project, that's reference number 43152. The Nesbitt Courthouse, which is our new courthouse in Anchorage, was completed in 1996. We were full when we moved into that facility. Over the last several years, with appropriations and approval from the legislature, we've added five Superior Court judges and one District Court judge. The Nesbitt Courthouse is more than full. Over the last several years, since fiscal year 2007, legislature's been appropriating money for a significant remodel of the Boney Courthouse, which is our older courthouse. The Boney Courthouse houses the Law Library and the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court and a variety of other functions. What we've been doing since 2007 is migrating the District Court kind of one piece at a time from the Nesbitt back over to the Boney. The Boney building will then house the Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court, and the District Court, and then the Nesbitt building will be reserved almost exclusively for our Superior Court cases. So far over the years, you've appropriated about $25.5 million to this effort. This is the final $6.1 million that will complete that project. This final phase includes improving prisoner transport, both into and up and around the building, construction of holding cells for prisoners, the additional courtrooms needed for the District Court judges, a new entry area, seismic upgrades, and the rest of the final work that goes into that project. Not included in the governor's bill, but part of the court's capital budget request, is also $8.3 million to do the corresponding remodel to the Nesbitt Courthouse. When the District Court moves out and the Superior Court fills up that space, Superior Court courtrooms are bigger. They hold 12-person juries, not six, and the jury rooms are also larger. So this is $8.3 million. Like I say, it's not in the governor's budget, but it is part of our request. Electronic filing, we have $5.9 million for that. That's reference number 52410. This e-filing system is kind of the core of our future plans. It will allow information to be transmitted directly to the court, directly into our computer systems electronically. It's a huge time saver. It reduces errors. and it brings us up to speed with where an awful lot of courts are in the country and where almost all courts are going. Not only does this impact the court, this and how we do business within the court system, but it'll have a significant impact on how we interact with citizens in general and all of the other justice agencies. So, for example, when a criminal complaint is filed by the Department of Law, the information on that complaint can automatically populate our database. This cuts down significantly on not only clerical input for data, but it also reduces dramatically the occurrences of errors. Every time you type in a date of birth or an arrest tracking number or an address or a name, there's the possibility of error. The fewer times you can input data, the better off we all are. This is a multi-year project. We hope to have it up and running and completed by about fiscal year 18. We're underway with it now, and we'll be going out with an RFP for the system within the next few weeks, most likely. We have a future request for a little over $2.5 million to complete this project, but that's somewhat of a placeholder. We'll have a much better idea how much more it takes to complete it once we're further down the road. Our next project, which is reference number 57097, is a new Superior Court courtroom here in Juneau. We have five judges in Juneau, five courtrooms in Juneau, but Juneau is one of the busiest locations we have. How they handle that here in the first district is with the use of retired judges and the use of judges from elsewhere in the first judicial district. The trouble is that the courtrooms in Juneau are almost always full, so the only time a visiting judge can come in and help with the caseload is if one of the existing judges is gone. That problem is exacerbated by the fact that the grand jury, which meets every Friday, also meets in one of the courtrooms. If we have an extra courtroom in Juneau, we can delay the time when we can more efficiently handle all the cases that come into Juneau and use the judges that are available to do this work if we just have a space for them to work. Our court security projects, that's reference number 47151. We have $1.3 million in the governor's capital budget. Our total request in this area was $7.2 million, but $1.3 is in Senate Bill 18. We're in a multi-year process, probably a never-ending process, of improving and upgrading court security throughout the state. In some areas, our large areas, we have court security office, well, a court security presence at the beginning screening. You've seen it here in Juneau. It's in Anchorage, Bethel, Ketchikan, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Palmer, Kenai, where you have security guards at the beginning, at the entrance. But a lot of other security needs are present in our court locations. Some of them are as small as better entry locks on the doors, better lighting in exterior areas. But it includes an awful lot of things that are not always obvious. Things like when we design buildings, how the layout's going to be constructed, how many what kind of entrance areas you have. The goal is always fewer ways to get into a building. This particular appropriation, if we were to receive the $1.3 million, we would focus on buildings around the state and upgrading our access control, which would be the door access, installation and maintenance of and replacement of cameras and dress alarms. In the deferred maintenance area, we have $2.4 million. That's reference number 54564.
Actually, Doug, I don't think we need to go through the individual sites on the deferred maintenance. Unless members have questions on any of the particular sites here, it's pretty.
That's certainly, Mr. Chairman,
looks like pretty much routine deferred maintenance. I did have a question, though, on the, did you say the Anchorage campus court renovation was not in the governor's budget, or there was $6.1 million?
$6.1 million that finishes the appropriation, well, the remodel for the Boney Courthouse. What's not there is remodel work for the Nesbitt Courthouse. That's when the district court, a lot of those district court courtrooms need to be converted into Superior Court courtrooms, which are larger courtrooms. So that's part of our overall budget request, but, you know, the governor, we submit a total budget request, and then the governor, when he builds his capital budget, decides which one of our requests he would like to include in his bill. But our total requests are more than is, than he includes in that bill. So one of the things we had asked for, but that the governor had elected not to include in at least his bill, was the $8.3 million for the Nesbitt remodel. I can skip ahead. If we go through the slide 12, there are a few things that, in addition to the Nesbitt remodel, that were not included in the governor, and I'll just touch very briefly on some of these other things. We have another $3.5 million for statewide remodels, replacements of worn furnishings around the state, building code and energy upgrades, and conversion to a lot of our digital records or analog records into digital records. I can go through some of these if you'd like, or the statewide remodeling, mostly efficiencies. And in a lot of our courtrooms, when we add new technology, you also have to change the space for both the judge and the clerk's work. Video links, we'd like to do a lot, it takes space, we'd like to do a lot more video links between correctional facilities and courtrooms to cut down on prisoner transport. The worn furnishings, these things that will become deferred maintenance eventually, we're trying to get ahead of those on some of these areas. And building code upgrades, again, sometimes they become a deferred maintenance. If we stay a little bit ahead of the curve, they fall under this category. And we need to convert an awful lot of our older court records to a digital format. We have a request in for that as well. And that's a summary of our requests. I'd be happy to field any questions.
Okay. I guess the only concern, Doug, I have is if you think some of these additional items are necessary and you weren't able to convince the governor of that, then perhaps, you know, we should meet with one of the committee members here and see if you can convince us and the committee that these are important and need to be included.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will.
Any questions for Mr. Wolver? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, let's now go to Commissioner Masters, Public Safety, Department of Public Safety. Commissioner, you're going to have anybody else come up too? So, okay.
Jeff Wolver.
And as you switch off presentations, then if you could just put your name on the record. With that, Commissioner, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Masters, Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. I've got a extreme cold going on, so I'm good for about 500 words in the... We'll see if we can keep it into that.
Okay, well, we'll limit you to 500 then.
Okay. And with me assisting with the presentation as well as potentially questions is Jeff Hoover, my Administrative Services Director. Our FY14 capital budget request, comparatively over historical requests, is a very modest request, totaling $5.782 million in general funds and $1.2 million in authorization for federal receipts. The first item, which is reference number 6121, is an annual request for aircraft vessel repair and maintenance. This request is $1.8 million in general fund, and this supports repair and maintenance of our aircraft fleet as well as our vessel fleet. And this is the entire fleet of aircraft, which is 43 in total. And then vessels that we have within our fleet, over 20 foot is 39 in number, and under 20 foot is 68 in number. The request supports things such as shipyards for larger vessels. Specifically, what we're looking at doing this year is bringing the patrol vessel Stimson into shipyard and getting, we're doing a engine rebuild of its mains. The remaining portions cover such things as other repairs, maintenance items, supplies. The next item on our list is reference number 3774, and this historically, as I go into these next three items, historically we've had annual requests for equipment and supplies and replenishment of equipment in our capital budget, and this item here specifically is for AST $400,000, and this is for the purchase and replacement of standard investigative equipment and operational equipment that the troopers use day to day. Some of it is electronic, such as radar units, accident reconstruction instrumentation, other investigative equipment, as well as things such as snow machines, four-wheelers, ATVs, digital cameras, recorders, and such. This $400,000 request supports over 300 commissioned troopers and their associated equipment in 50 locations around the state. Similar to the AST request is a request for the Alaska Wildlife Troopers law enforcement equipment and replacement as well. And this is reference number 45300. And this is also a request for $400,000, and it a little bit of variance because of the type of work that AWT does. So you'll see things such as boats and outboard motors. The next item is reference number 51707, and this is for support of our existing VPSOs, which currently were about 95 VPSOs. And this supports equipment and replacement of that equipment for them as well. Also includes things such as uniforms and then tasers and replacement of tasers. Tasers are the VPSO's primary intermediate use of force weapon.
I'm sorry, Commissioner, could you speak up a little bit more? You said these are tasers that you're referring to, and what's the difference between a taser and a stun gun?
Mr. Chairman, tasers and stun guns is a fairly common term that they utilize for tasers. Tasers is although it's somewhat generic, it's also the manufacturer's brand name of the units that we're using.
Okay, and you were saying, and I apologize to committee members, I usually wait till the end here, but I didn't hear what you were saying. And by the way, Senator Olson is joined us. Welcome, Senator Olson.
Good morning.
So do you have an adequate number of stun guns or lasers, whatever we're calling these?
Mr. Chairman, currently what we do is issue a taser to all VPSOs, and we also issue to all troopers as well. Tasers, like any other piece of equipment, have a lifespan, and they need to be upgraded as well. The taser, and I'll back up one bit here. VPSOs don't carry firearms during the normal course of their duty. Their primary defensive weapons that they have available to them is a taser, pepper spray, and a collapsible baton. So this is a primary piece of equipment.
Okay, yeah, and I apologize. I think I called it a laser, which is a little different than a taser, so, okay. Oh, since I've already interrupted you here, Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just was wondering how we dispose of the stun gun type apparatus. Do we put them on a different market? Are they destroyed?
Through the chair, I'd have to confirm this. I believe what we do is we turn them in to the manufacturer and use them as trade-ins. but I'd have to confirm that.
Senator Bishop?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, back to 45300 real quickly. Wildlife troopers, the consumable equipment that we're replacing here, so radar guns, do they do traffic too, or?
I'm through the chair. We have some on our road systems that do traffic enforcement as well. They don't do traffic enforcement primarily, but they do have, they're trained in radar use, and they use the radars in their vehicles as well.
Okay, and then I want to back up to 68 smaller vessels on your, you've got under 20 feet. Did I hear you say that? You got 68 smaller vessels under 20 feet? Are they part of the wildlife troopers fleet in that 68 smaller vessels?
I'm through the chair. Yes, they are, and these are such things, anything from a canoe, small skiffs, anything that's under 20 foot. They don't include things such as life rafts and things like that that are deployed on our vessels for safety equipment.
Okay, so the wildlife troopers' boats and motors are captured under the 68 smaller vessels in your bigger inventory.
Yes, and through the chair to clarify as well, both AST and AWT utilize funds from this request for more of the major repairs that they do on these vessels, but they also utilize their equipment funds for other smaller type purchases.
Thank you.
Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I just would point out again that we're seeing quite a bit of items that are before us in a capital budget request that appear to should have been included in an operating budget or have a maintenance line for depreciation so that we can replace some of this without coming to the legislature for a capital budget appropriation. I'm sure we were contributing to that factor of why it's moved like this. I just would point out that these are not necessarily what I would think should be in a capital budget.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to further that question. Commissioner, why is that not under the operating budget? Because obviously I'm seeing things here that are have got a limited shelf life. They're going to have to be recycled. They're going to have to be turned in. They're going to have to buy new equipment. Why aren't they under the operating budget request that's there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the simplest answer is historically that's the way it has been placed in our budget, and we've been operating that way. There are some benefits to having it in the capital budget, and some of those benefits, the primary benefit is it allows us to go beyond the end of the fiscal year, so we can take advantage of sale dates, sale times, procurement processes that may extend beyond just the end of the fiscal year, and also it allows us to try to get some fiscal discipline in our supervisors so that they don't get up to the end of the fiscal year and do this, for lack of a better word, spending spree to try to spend funds down.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue.
Sure, please do.
With all due respect, Commissioner, having been here for the last 13 years, I don't think it's been the tradition that you ask for equipment like this under a capital request as opposed to an operating request, though. Your predecessors, at least I didn't get the impression that they did that when I was going through the public safety budgets in the past. I realize it was several administrations ago, but at least that's not my perspective. I'm just saying that from what I thought, it was kind of unusual that we do, and I share Senator Fairclough's concern is why are we seeing that. But if that's where you're coming from, I certainly respect that.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Senator Olson. Good points there. We do need to kind of clean up our budgetary process here and make sure if they're operating items that they be in the operating budget, in the capital budget. Proceed, Commissioner.
Okay. The next item in our capital request is item 54346, and this is new apps and transitional contract support for $975,000. We're at a point with our Alaska Public Safety Information Network to transition from our legacy apps and system, which is mainframe based, to our new apps, which is server based. This will allow us to operate both systems simultaneously for a year. of giving us contract support for new apps and while we bring it online, and then deal with any issues. Number one, primarily deal with any issues that may come up during its initial implementation period. It allows us also to get knowledge transfer from the builders of the system, which is our contractor, to our state employees and our own network and programming specialists. This is, I'd like to add, this is necessary also for a backup to ensure that we have a fail-safe when we do transition over to new apps, and to ensure that we have the capability of transferring back to legacy if we have a failure of the new apps system. The next item, which is item number 56518, is a request for $300,000 for the Bethel Public Safety Hangar repair and renovation. And we've listed this as a phased request. We have a 10,000 square foot hangar in Bethel. It houses our four primary DPS aircraft as well as two Civil Air Patrol aircraft. This is a 30-year-old hangar, and it has 30-year-old problems. Significantly, what we're trying to deal with this budget request is ensure that it's placed back on the footings and foundation that it's currently built on. In the future years, it will require some continued work, certainly in the areas of mechanical heating and energy repairs as well. The replacement cost for this was estimated for FY13 as over $9 million, so it's more cost effective for us to repair the facility and over a several year period of time and get it back into a better operating condition. The other thing that we're needing to do this year with this level of funding is repair the door. This next item is basically a federal receipt authority for $1.2 million from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, also commonly known as a JEA or a joint enforcement agreement between the Department of Public Safety and National Marine Fisheries Service. This allows us to augment our state patrols while we're simultaneously doing some work for the National Marine Fisheries and co-managed fisheries. This allows us to bring on technicians in rural areas of the state, primarily coastal communities, and it allows us to do additional vessel patrol days, or sea days, what we call them, out in some of our state fisheries, particularly out in western Aleutians. This next item, which is item number 56541, is a request to transfer $200,000 in funds from the Fish and Game Fund to the department to support marine enforcement surveillance platforms and equipment. And we're not detailing specifically each item of this because this goes towards some of our covert operations. As the committee may know, when there's fines and receipts that are brought in under criminal cases, those fines go into the Fish and Game Fund for availability by Fish and Game. This transfer and what we're intending to do with the funds is supported by Fish and Game as well. Currently, it's my understanding that this is the balance, or pretty close to the balance of what is in that fund. The remaining items, and I'll take the lead from the previous presenter, the remaining items are in our deferred maintenance, and that's $1.3 million in a number of facilities. We have four facilities primarily that we're going to utilize these or intend to utilize these in. Of course, the priority may differ depending on circumstances that may arise, but those facilities are Fairbanks, Sitka, some of our rural trooper housing units, and then a general pot of money to do maintenance and facility upgrades.
Is there any questions that committee members may have on those particular facilities? Okay, seeing none then. Okay, you're ready for questions. I have just a comment, and we'll address this later because it's an operating budget item, but I have the commerce in my finance subcommittee, and they're showing an increment for the transfer of the ABC board from your department to Commerce. So there should be a corresponding savings, I would think, in your department. But I understand that's an operating budget item, and it's probably not appropriate today since we're talking about capital, but we'll save that for another time.
Okay.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back on page seven, or slide seven, I can't remember the acronym, but nationally, the federal government collects statistical information from states when they issue murder or other crime statistics. Can you tell me what that acronym is?
I believe you're referring to the Uniform Crime Reporting System, UCR, which is an index of select few crimes, major crimes that are, is designed to give states the ability to take a look at crime rate trends in specific areas.
Thank you. Commissioner, if I might continue. The $975,000, is that affecting that system in how Alaska reports to the Uniform Crime Reporting Code?
It does and it doesn't. Primarily, it does not affect UCR reporting. It does affect our ability to interface with our own records, our new records management system, to better report or automatically report. But generally, I would say that that's pretty minute, so I'd say it does not affect our ability to do UCR reporting. We'd do that the way we do it now.
Commissioner, are we still hand reporting or not digitally transmitting information for the Uniform Crime Reporting Codes?
I'd have to specifically give you an update on that. I would say that at this point we are still hand verifying at least the reported information that's coming from the police agencies around the state to the department for this report.
Mr. Chairman, as you know, you're a former member of Standing Together Against Rape Star. I worked there over a decade ago and have asked repeatedly why the state of Alaska does not digitize and standardize the way we collect data so that we can report incrementally and electronically. And the reason that is because the Uniform Crime Reporting Code takes, at least as I understand it, just takes the highest penalty. So if I'll give the example of a rape victim. If a woman was raped in Alaska and then she was killed after that, the only report that goes up nationally is that she was killed. And so that secondary crime would not be reported. Or if a child was kidnapped and then killed, the murder would be counted, but not necessarily other associated crimes that were against that particular individual. And so I've been asking for over a decade why Alaska wasn't moving that direction, and I knew it was because we hadn't standardized our reports, and we'd been working on that for years, but we're continuing to invest in technology that doesn't interface or doesn't actually roll up those costs, and I'm wondering when we're going to take a strategic look at least incrementally starting to move that direction, and maybe there's a reason we don't want to, but as a former advocate in the role as an executive director of a service agency that's responding to victims, it's important that all of the crimes are accounted for and that we really get a clear picture of what's happening in the state of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Comment?
Through the chair. Actually, I believe we are moving that direction. A very significant piece of that within DPS has been the implementation of ARMS, which is the Alaska Records Management System. That allows us to take our data and gives us the ability to break it down just as you're suggesting. What it doesn't allow us to do yet until other users come on board is do the same thing with other agency data like Juneau Police Department's data or Fairbanks Police Department's data, for example.
Go ahead.
Commissioner, then how can we encourage people to move that direction? It's been over a decade, so I think I've been patient in as far as raising the issue and not making it confrontational, but how do we encourage then local agencies like Anchorage or others that have their own law enforcement agencies which we greatly appreciate, to dovetail in our system so that we can electronically transmit some of this information to a national level so that we can be compared apples to apples versus other states.
Commissioner?
Is there anything we can do?
I think there's two things we can do. One is we can adapt our systems, which we're moving towards, to allow for a very cost-effective system that they can either tag onto or that we provide services that would allow that to be done low cost or no cost to them. The second one is for those agencies that don't submit crime data as required, that we look at other, some would call them punitive measures of withholding state grant funds and such.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Senator Fairclough, as you know, this is a frustration of mine as well, especially in the area of procurement, that we're not electronically compatible and we're not up to speed on technology, and we're still doing things manually and by hand. So, and then each department's kind of doing their own thing. So I think this is a bigger issue department-wide that we probably should address with Karen Rayfield or somebody from the administration to look at maybe streamlining and becoming more a little more efficient in that area. Is there any additional questions for the commissioner? Did you have any additional comments, thoughts?
Just one more thing through the chair. One other thing that we're doing right now is we're reconstituting our Criminal Justice Information Advisory Board, specifically to talk about information sharing data systems and also uniform platforms by which we can share data. So ensuring that as our projects move forward, that we communicate and coordinate with each other on the types of systems that we have in order for them to be able to talk effectively with each other.
Senator Fairclough.
Mr. Chairman, I just don't want the commissioner to leave without saying that I truly appreciate his leadership and his team's effort across Alaska under challenging situations to continue to respond to the needs of individual Alaskans and meet community needs as well. He's been a great convener, a great advocate for public safety, and I truly appreciate what he's done. It's just when we come to technology like you, if it's procurement, I just would like to see us able to communicate and express what's happening in Alaska in an accurate way that has data that can back it up. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. And you have done an excellent job in keeping state of Alaska and our constituents safe. And I understand the technology thing is just it's a matter of money. It costs a lot of money to upgrade systems. But I would like to see a more centralized effort done here so that not each department's doing their own little technology thing. And again, that's pretty much outside of your realm of responsibility. So thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, at this point in time, then we'll move on to Department of Law. Presenting for Department of Law, let's see, I have Sabatne. Yep, I see him. And Dave, is it Blaisdell?
Blaisdell, yes.
Blaisdell. Okay. And if you could, I don't know who's presenting first, but if just put your name on the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Rick Sabatne. I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And to my right's Mr. Blaisdell, who's our Administrative Director for the Department of Law. You may see that we don't have a PowerPoint presentation. That's for two reasons. One is I can do this very briefly, so because there are only two items in our capital budget. And the other is probably because both items in our capital budget do relate to technology. I'm actually going to start with reference item 56509. I was going to start with the other item, but this item, $400,000, dovetails into the conversation that you were just having with Commissioner Masters. This is $400,000 for the Department of Law to create an infrastructure that allows us to share information with any agency that we come into contact. It's to talk about the things that Commissioner Masters was just talking about, talking about in regards to reconstituting the Criminal Justice Information Committee so that we can all be working off the same page. The governor has been active in trying to get this ball rolling down the hill. For example, the National Governors Association has, I think, twice now been to Alaska to talk about a global reference architecture that would allow the executive branch agencies to communicate with each other, and also to do that with the court system. As you can see, the court system is asking for an electronic filing system, and we, the Department of Law, are going to be probably the first people to deal with that electronic filing system, and we have to have in place plans to deal with that. So we've been having these discussions, and now well, let me give you a simple example of the type of thing that we've learned. We've been trying to digitize discovery in criminal cases with an experiment here in Juneau, and see what the costs ultimately would be to bring that out statewide, to provide electronic communications from the police department to the DA's office to defense counsel. And frankly, there were a lot of hidden expenses in that project that we just didn't anticipate at the time. But this is to allow us to expand upon what we learned with that project and to communicate with health and social services, with corrections, with public safety, with the Department of Administration. And I don't know whether Mr. Blaisdell had any more comments about.
I think Dave Blaisdell, Administrative Services Director, I think the one other piece that is relevant when we talked about the agency data sharing is that we have been working with the court system. We had we have a contract for an individual helping us develop our case management system, who has worked with the court system contractor. We've worked with the Department of Administration, and so hopefully we are moving towards a situation where we're going to be able to have a much more integrated system across the state.
Moving to the other item, it's reference number 56972. That's $1.8 million for a replacement for the case management system for the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. We rolled out the case management system we have in 1997. It is no longer supported both hardware-wise and software-size and software-wise. Our hardware, we have literally had to go on eBay to buy hardware because you can't get it from a regular vendor. If we have a replacement problem, a replacement need for the hardware. As far as the software goes, because we're working with this antiquated system, the Criminal Division of the Department of Law is working on Windows XP and Office 2003, and we can't move up to 2007, 2000, and whatever the next number was, or to 2013 because of the system that we have that's connected. We have our case management system literally controls almost every stage of the process. We can draft charging documents. We draft charging documents from it. We maintain our calendars so we know where we need to be in court. We use it to see that the person who was just arrested for DUI in Fairbanks has a pending DUI in Ketchikan. We on the software side are using a database that it was an Oracle database that was version 5 or 6, and Oracle's at 12 or 13, something like that. So we are We, for the last several years, have been able to hold things together through, like I said, eBay. We've switched kind of to a different platform, but we've kind of hit a wall where that if it goes down, I mean, everything goes back to paper and pencil, and we are going to be half as efficient as we are now.
Okay, and that's your $400,000 request?
No, the $400,000 was the first one for the information sharing between agencies, and the last one was case management system.
Okay, for the $1.8 million?
Yes.
Okay, very good. All right, questions? Okay, seeing none, pretty self-explanatory. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your presentation. Okay, next will be corrections. Let's see who we have. I have here, let's see, for corrections, Leslie Houston.
Yes.
You must be Leslie. Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Leslie, if you could then put your name on the record, and if you want anybody else to join you, they're more than welcome to. Just make sure you put their name on the record. So, with that, the floor is yours.
Thank you. My name is Leslie Houston. I'm Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Corrections. And we have before you today three capital projects that all come under the categories of maintaining current levels of service. We are not seeking funds for any new initiatives. Going from the one-page handout and down the list, I'll start with, in order, project number 50675. This is $225,000 undesignated general funds for our regional and community jails in the areas of repairs, renovations, and equipment. So far in this, for next fiscal year, we have 12 out of the 15 community jails have requested some funds to replace various items that come under the categories of fire, life, and safety. Examples are tasers, gun safes, slider doors, control repairs. Our second item is project number 45637. This is annual facilities, maintenance, and repairs, seeking $1 million of undesignated general funds. And this is in the area for items that can be easily repaired or refurbished, whether they're electrical, food service replacement items, kitchen items, and any other critical items that may rise to the list during the current fiscal year. Our third item is for deferred maintenance. This is project number 49376. This is our deferred maintenance area, and in this year's request, we are seeking $4.8 million, and this is again in general fund dollars. And this, the projects, there are nine projects in six different facilities. And at that point, Mr. Chairman, I can either go down the list of the projects.
I don't believe that's necessary. Thank you for the offer. Is there any questions that members may have on these individual items? I'm assuming Goose Creek is taken care of for a while. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, you are correct.
Okay, good. Okay, Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's off topic, but is the transaction to increase the perimeter for the land out by Highland Correctional complete?
Through the chair to Senator Fairclough. We're actually in the home stretch on this project. On January 29th, the municipality of Anchorage, through the assembly, had a unanimous vote approving the transaction. At this point in time, we're waiting for snow and ice to melt so we can locate the survey markers to do the appraisal, and that will complete the transaction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Very good. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is off subject as well, but one of the concerns that I have, or one of the things that I was wondering about, what is the status, and maybe it's not even a capital reason, but what is the status of the holding facility or any kind of quote-unquote jail up in Kotzebue?
Through the chair to Senator Olson, we are currently, they have maintained their contract throughout this fiscal year. We do have in the operating side the continuation of the project we've been doing. It's phase two, which brings it to a close. We have allocated, I believe, what will make all the community jails whole in their requests and their expenditures. And then we've also entered an arrangement for what we want to do is enter a five-year contract with the jails with one-year options to renew. and then we'll add a consumer price index inflator for these areas to try to keep up with their cost of living increases.
So the issue has been settled.
Through the chair to Senator Olson, I sure hope it is settled. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, very good. Any other questions for corrections? Seeing none, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, rather than taking a brief at ease, let's just move right on here to the last group, which is the university. And it does look like we have President Gamble here, so that's great. If he wants to join us, please.
Sorry.
Okay, President Gamble and Michelle. Michelle, congratulations. Weren't you one of the top 40 under 40? I guess we all know how old you are now. At least you're under 40 anyway.
Way under 40.
Way under 40. Okay, great. Well, congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and if you could please put your name on the record. I don't know who's going to be doing the presenting, but if you go back and forth, just remember so that we can keep accurate records. So the floor is yours, President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Gamble, President of the University of Alaska System. And I have with me this morning Michelle Rizik, who is the Chief Budget Officer and also now the Interim Director of Human Relations for the university. And while she's top 40 under 40, she says now she feels like she's over 50. She's doing double duty. Appreciate her being here this morning as well. We only have two items for you this morning. There are no PowerPoints. We have two references that you have before you. The first reference is 45-326, and that is the fourth year of the governor's budget of a state appropriation of $37.5 million for deferred maintenance. We've been before the committee numerous times talking about the size of the deferred maintenance budget across the university system. And the second item that we have is reference 57-085, which is $1.3 million in receipt authority. Those dollars to actually be provided in a student housing project by the student board payments that they would make for the rooms in this project as they occupy those rooms. So there's no general fund requirement listed for that second project. And as we've said before, in the first one in deferred maintenance, we've divided that up across the entire system. We have a priority system that looks at the age of the buildings. There's a distribution formula that we use to look at deferred maintenance, and then we kind of use the eyeball method too to see exactly what the real problems are, and then we make a subjective value assessment on where the dollars are going to be divided up. And they're divided up across the whole system to include the community campuses to the tune of 37.5. And Mr. Chair, those are the only two items we have in the governor's proposed capital budget.
Okay, very good. And I think both of these are pretty self-explanatory. Perhaps do you want to discuss any of the items that aren't in the governor's budget?
Well, that takes us into a whole realm of difficulties. let's see if I can summarize how this works. We are approaching what is an overlap of several pretty high priority needs. We have the deferred maintenance need, which overall is a very large number. It's north of $750 million across over 400 buildings. And we're reviewing those buildings today with an objective assessment method, because the buildings have a value to the mission of the university, but they also have an age, meaning that do we want to rebuild that building or fix that building or not? And so you have to look at the value and look at the age and and we have an objective way to look at that, and we're actually coming up with a way to decide whether or not we need to start tearing down some buildings across the system. Because the value is low, the age is high, it's not worth putting money into them anymore. And we've never had a way to look at at our facilities in this manner. And this goes a long way toward trying to bring that deferred maintenance number down in case any of those buildings actually have attached to them some sort of a deferred maintenance or R&R number. We can eliminate that number if we do this properly. So we've got that working. That's the deferred maintenance. Then we have this this juncture of two items coming together. One of them is the age of the power plant and the risk assessment with regard to the power plant at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, which is well known to most people. It's past its service life. It's a coal-fired plant. And the difficulty being that as we plan and go for permits for a new plant, which is a long lead time process, the question really becomes in Fairbanks, do you build another coal-fired plant, albeit with high technology and a capability to burn waste, which this one would have if we went that direction, or are we secure enough in the knowledge that we're going to have a guaranteed supply of gas starting at a certain point in time in which we would gap the period between now and then, take the risk, and try to build a gas-fired plant. Coal is going to present problems. Number one, it's more expensive. Number two, I don't think we've even begun to see the troubles that we'll be in with regard to permitting. And there's some national issues going on right now with building or upgrading coal-fired plants that are not entirely clear, but none of them are encouraging. So we've got a conundrum there. We also have another piece that's come to play, and that's the second half of the engineering buildings, which were authorized last year. We got half those dollars, and so now we're looking at, in some way, trying to figure out how to get those buildings built, actually start construction, and know that we've got the money that once we mobilize and start building that we can build through to completion. And so this is the second year where we come back and look for a way to go forward with regard to the engineering buildings at both UAA and UAF. These buildings don't build much for the future in terms of the overall engineering demand. They're pretty much going to be utilized to almost capacity as soon as we can open the doors. But the two buildings they replace will be remodeled, will be used. They've got a service life left in them. The problem is it's just not necessarily a full-up engineering service life because the accreditation requirements for engineers these days and the laboratories and the classrooms that they have to do the type of academic rigor that results in an engineering degree today are not present in the two old buildings. And rather than try to fix that, we've all agreed that moving ahead with the two new buildings is the best way to do that. Okay. That is over $100 million. That's around $109 million to complete that, which represents approximately half of what the total cost was as we came to this project last year.
President Gebb, I'm going to ask you an unfair question, and I think it's safe since the two committee members from Fairbanks aren't here. Is there a need for one of the colleges to be done before the other, or they both need to be done at the same time, or are they both high demand, and the current engineering buildings are both old and worn out? I know this is an unfair question.
No, it's not, Mr. Chair.
But $100 million is going to be a lot to try to get this year.
I don't think it's an unfair question at all. I mean, we've looked at this, a number of different ways, and the need is not a facilities need as much as it's the fact that neither one of the two universities can accommodate the total number of engineers that we need to produce for Alaska. The demand today for engineers is high enough where both of the universities need to graduate these engineers to put them into the workforce at the demand level and at the enrollment level that we currently have. You know, the enrollment will go up and down a couple of percentages at the front end, but the total enrollment of all those that are in class represents what we're trying to deal with. Many of them are in the more senior classes, the juniors and seniors, where the complexity of their classwork requires the kinds of things that are going to be in these new engineering buildings. So half a loaf in this particular case doesn't really work for the need. So the need is not so much the building, the need is the demand of the academic rigor required by the courses across the entire front of engineers, and you've got different engineers being produced, different majors being produced in Anchorage than you do in Fairbanks. They've sort of distributed those majors between the two of them. And that was the argument we used last year, and the chancellors used last year, for holding hands with the two projects and moving forward on a united front. Because it's an Alaska engineering and academic problem as opposed to just a facility problem where we could go another year, for example, with the old facility.
Okay, and I understand, I think the Fairbanks campus is more petroleum engineering and the Anchorage campus is more civil or mechanical.
Among other things, and there's, you know, you've got electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and so on and so forth as well.
But I am concerned about the ANSET program. It's been very successful, and I guess that's at, is that at both campuses as well, or is that just the Anchorage campus?
The ANSET engineering program is at UAA, but within ANSET, we have a number of different kinds of engineers. They're within the ANSET program, but they're taking different majors. Again, you know, an electrical engineer here, a civil engineer here, a mechanical engineer there. And depending on what their major is where they're going to conduct their classes.
Okay, Senator Fairclough.
Can you tell us in broad ways, knowing that there are different expertise that are being achieved at either university, what's the number of students enrolled in the on the Anchorage campus versus the Fairbanks campus? Do you know that off?
Not off the top of my head. No, I'd hesitate to give you a number over the table. I can provide that for the record, though.
I just was trying to support my chairman, and the issue is that we may have to choose, and no one wants to choose between two great facilities or two great campuses. But in the end, for me, and not because of my geographic residency, but because of the challenges of power generation up in the Fairbanks area, I'm wondering, and it won't be popular, but I'm wondering if we build it, how are we going to provide energy to it at this particular point?
Yeah, just to let you know too, there's a Kit Duke online, so if you want to toss some questions that way, you can as well. But do you, President Gamble, did you want to address?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we would counter with a proposal that if it comes down to choosing, we would rather defer that option to, again, moving both of them forward at the same time at a reduced amount if that's what it comes to. But the minute we break those two projects apart, we risk not getting one of them at one location, and that creates a lot of internal problems for us. We've been very successful moving them both together, and we would rather see a reduced amount applied evenly to both of them and work those contingency plans rather than separate the two if it comes to that.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I've noticed and I support that you have held or capped tuition for this coming year. Unfortunately, I think that you're going to see, if we give both buildings, if we're able to invest and bring both buildings online, do you have the operating dollars in your budget today to be able to support those, or will you need new operating budget dollars too?
We would need new operating budget dollars. We don't have a system currently. We've proposed one, but we don't have a system currently that provides the operating dollars, the initial operating dollars for new construction. In fact, we've suggested the idea of a university building fund that would provide those up front before we ever cut the ribbon on the building and start feeding that operating account. But that is currently not the case, and we would have to come to you for the operating funds. That's correct.
Thank you, President Gamble. I support that particular concept. I just am concerned that we don't have that in looking at future revenues and the fiscal forecast that we currently see right now, that these are all things for consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dunleavy.
I was going to say, thank you through the chair. I was going to say a compromise would be to put one of the buildings at the Mat-Su campus, but that's for another time. Question on Alaska Chinook salmon production decline. Is this in conjunction with, or is this totally separate from a request that we're getting through Fish and Game for $10 million over 3 to 5 years to do king salmon studies?
It is a separate request. It turns out that we found out about that particular initiative as well, and my understanding is that the option and possibly even the intent of Fish and Game is to engage the university. And we're looking forward to working that as much as we can in order to align ourselves with the interests of the state and the interests of our researchers to the benefit of the state to use that money and get the most bang for the buck.
Through the chair.
Sure.
So the university was arriving at this independently of what Fish and Game is doing.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would just add that the two requests, though, are complementary to each other. I mean, we are working together on those two things, so it's not necessarily an either or. And we are working with Fish and Game on that, and it is our understanding that a portion of that $10 million, approximately $700,000, may come to the university for specifically process studies. And so we are working with them on how those two projects could work together.
Okay, and that was Michelle Reisig, by the way. So you need to put your name on the record.
Oh, for the record, Michelle Reisig.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. All right. Where were we here, President Gamble?
Well, we had talked about the fact that what wasn't in the governor's budget that's still looming in front of us is the second half of the engineering buildings. We've got the power plant. And then we've got this piece of research that we were looking to see if we could more specifically address for Alaskan purposes other than just general basic research. And so, yes, there are a number of items. And unfortunately, another piece that goes along with the deferred maintenance number, one of the things that contributes annually to the increase in that number is the fact that, as we all know, at about the 20, 25, maybe even 30-year point, depending on what kind of a building you build, there comes a time when you repurpose the building. When you do a housing project, for example, it's quite common in a privatized housing project to accumulate an account that at the 25-year point is there and available to repurpose that entire housing organization, that entire housing unit. We're not much different than that, but we don't have such an account. The amount for the size of the real estate square footage and the age of that square footage that we currently have and in the present value of it is about $50 million a year. Now, if you make that contribution every year, what you do is you prevent projects from kicking over into the deferred maintenance side, and it can actually reduce. Once you reduce the amount of deferred maintenance, it can hold it down and flatten it. And it's another way to keep deferred maintenance from rising and rising. We have never been successful to any degree at all, more than $1 or $2 million in the past, at getting any money devoted specifically to that repurposing. And so we'll repurpose classrooms as we can, but normally we don't do that until the classroom is, or the building has become deferred, and now it becomes a deferred maintenance project rather than a modification. And if we can, we'll repurpose the classroom at the same time. So you may have a classroom that's 30 years old and it's really out of date for accreditation purposes, and when it finally becomes its time to get deferred maintenance money, we'll do it. But because we don't have a program to know when that's going to be, we go from year to year to year hoping. And then reassessing the priorities every year, depending on what we got from the previous year. It's not very programmatic, Mr. Chair, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Point well taken. Was there anything else? I there's a UAF improving Arctic oil spill, a UAF partnership to develop.
Those are the line item research items that we put into the capital budget that are specifically oriented toward Alaskan issues and Alaskan problems. We're offering that up as a way to maybe get the attention of those who would want to hire outside consultants to come in and work some of these unique Alaskan issues. And I've been stopped many times by legislators right here in the building who have said, why aren't we engaging you guys to do some of this work instead of bringing in outside consultants? And I affirm that the shingle's out, and we're ready to go on some of those. And so this year, we actually put some specific examples in there of some of the areas that we would be delighted to take on for the legislature as it considers issues like gas and oil and natural resources.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I think the research on Arctic oil spill is an area of a lot of interest. So.
Mr. Chair, it's also getting national interest. And if we want to be America's Arctic University and stand out as such, we have the capability to work some issues that are now becoming national issues. And we'd like to put ourselves in the position of being the go-to university for some of those. Dollars in research such as those kinds of research, I think, would work real well to help us position ourselves and position Alaska to be controlling our own destiny as a result, again, of somebody coming in from outside or having the federal government do it without the proper research.
Okay, and if I may, too, and again, this may be, I may be pushing my luck on this one as well. That's why we have you last, is so we can ask the tough questions. The tax credit that we passed last year, have you benefited from that, and have you been able to use some of that money for capital projects?
I will defer to Michelle for a couple of the details, but let me say in general, we haven't been overwhelmed, but the answer is yes, we have benefited. And specifically in some cases, we've been told it's not of particular interest to some of the potential folks that we thought would be interested. But Michelle, if you have something to add.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to get back with you on that and check in with our foundation for specifics on how we've benefited from that.
But we certainly have had people take advantage of it. There's no question about that. But it hasn't been a rush to the door.
Okay, very good. And I'm the company that comes to mind is Shell. And obviously, I think if Shell had more success this year, that they'd be perhaps helping in this Arctic oil research as well. Just a thought. I can't speak for Shell. But I believe you have had some mining companies that have taken advantage of the tax
Correct.
Credit. Okay, well, you've got some big issues here. Obviously, the power plant is a concern. We've talked about that. I hate to have the campus nice and warm and heated and then the rest of Fairbanks cold. So, I mean, the heating in that area is a big issue, not just for the campus, but for the whole community. And if we're going to spend that kind of money, I'd like to encompass the whole area. And also, it just seems odd. You've got to be one of the only campuses in the United States that has its own power plant. Again, at Anchorage, we write a check every month to Chugach or NSTAR. But I understand it's a little more complicated than that, and the infrastructure is not in place like it is in Anchorage and probably down here in Juneau. So those are big issues, both the engineering colleges and the power plant.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a great observation. If you go back to the 60s when that power plant was built and look at Fairbanks, the town got a power plant, Eielson got a power plant, the fort got a power plant, the campus got a power plant. That's what we did back then. And I think it raises a really good question, is if the cost of a power plant these days that's environmentally sound is approaching $250 million, is that a state issue or is that a university issue? Because the way we did it back in the early 1960s was the way it was done, I'm not sure today the rationale still exists to support that same logic.
I agree. And I certainly have no objections to using coal. I mean, we have a ton of coal in Alaska and it's pretty close to Fairbanks. But I think permitting, because of the current federal regulations, is going to be difficult for a coal-powered plant. And now, hopefully, by April 15th, we'll know a little bit more on the gas and the gas availability for that area. So maybe if we can just put a Band-Aid on for another year, I don't know. I don't want the kids freezing up there in Fairbanks, but that's a big issue. That's a tough one, and certainly we're going to rely on Senator Kelly and Senator Bishop to help us on that.
Well, when the numbers play out and it gets down to what we can really lay out there, we would be very happy to come back and make that tough decision for you. Today we're providing you a general overview of our budget, but I know that decision's coming, and we've done a lot of thinking about that, and when the time comes, we'll be happy to sit down and give you the benefit of our thoughts, if that's going to be of any help at all.
Very good. Well, any additional questions? If not, thank you very much for your presentation. You're doing a great job there at the university, and we want to help and assist however we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So with that, that completes our discussion on the capital budget, Senate Bill 18. Tomorrow, Senator Kelly will be chairing the committee meeting. We're going to have a presentation by Commissioner Becky Holtberg, and the topic is state contract negotiations. She's going to give us an update on the negotiations. And then Thursday, we'll go back to hearing some bills. I would like to try to get some bills out before March. That's the anticipated date, March 1st, the anticipated date of having the oil tax bill, assuming it gets through resources. So we'll have Senate Bill 7, which is corporate income tax, and then Senate Bill 12, public procurement. We can, on Friday, we'll take up the extension of the Suicide Prevention Council and extension of the Special Ed Service Agency. So if there's any questions or anything else coming before the committee, if not, we're adjourned till tomorrow.